Act one, scene one of Shakespeare's Macbeth. It's late at night. There's a dense fog. Thunder, lightning, rain. Three witches converge on an abandoned Scottish heath, and the conversation that follows ensues. Where shall we three meet again? In thunder, lightning, or in rain? When the hurly-burly's done, when the battle's lost and won, that will e'er be the set of sun. Where the place? Upon the heath, there to meet with Macbeth. At which point the three witches hear their spirit masters calling to them. I come, Grey Malkin. Paddock calls. Anon. And then together in unison, the three of them say, fair is foul, and foul is fair. Hover through the fog and dirty air. And then they disappear. When I first read these words years ago for my college English lit class, I was surprised at the power of the poetry and how it affected me, but didn't completely understand why I was so affected until I got to my English lit class and the professor explained to us that all great literature contains universal themes, by which she meant all great stories speak to us because they're about us. We see ourselves in them. Then she asked us, who do the witches represent in Macbeth? The power of evil at work in the world all around us. We all sense it. And who does Macbeth represent? You and me, and our constant temptation to yield to blind ambition. Ah. Now I was starting to see what the story was all about and how it connected to me. No wonder the story was so powerful. It was about me. It's about you, because all great literature has universal themes. And what is true of all great literature is even more true of inspired literature, because when God's Spirit gets involved in shaping the story, it becomes even more powerful and more piercing and more relevant to us. I want to invite us to see today's epic Bible story about Noah and the flood through the eyes of my English lit professor as we ask at a literary level, what do the different elements of this Bible story represent? What are the universal themes embedded in this story? What is it about this story that is so powerful that it has been handed down from generation to generation over the course of millennia to us today? Let's begin with a prayer. Holy Spirit, help us to unlock the mystery, the secrets, the symbolism that is embedded in this great story that you have inspired so that we can understand what you are trying to say to us through it, and then we can live it. Thy word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. May it be so today, Lord Jesus. In your name we pray. Amen. The story of Noah and the flood raises difficult theological questions, such as, would God really condemn every living creature to death, even innocent children and animals, through a cataclysmic flood? Some people would respond to that by saying, yes, that all of humanity had become so corrupted, it was necessary to wipe the slate clean so that life on earth could have a fresh start. Others would respond by saying no, that the notion that God would destroy even innocent children and animals is an old way of seeing God that was updated and corrected by Jesus and the New Testament. But I don't want us today to get stuck in that kind of theological debate. It's an important question. It's an important conversation. There's a time and place for it. But I don't want us to get caught up in that kind of theological quibbling today, because today I want to invite us to focus on the powerful, practical lessons that God wants to teach us through this story. Because as my English lit professor from college would have said, the story of Noah and the flood has a phenomenal narrative arc. By the way, that was meant to be a pun, so... So keep up with me here, right? Narrative, arc, no. Actually, there are all kinds of corny church jokes that I could tell you about Noah and the flood today. For example, just a little sampling of what kind of lights did Noah install on the ark? Floodlights, of course. Here's a better one. You didn't like that one. Let me try another one. Here's a better one. Where did Noah keep the honeybees on the ark? In the archive, of course. But let's not get stuck there either. So moving right along, I can hear my college English professor as she says to us, hey class, let's take this story apart piece by piece and put it back together again so that we're sure we understanding what it's saying. So, class, she would start off by saying, what does Noah represent in this story? You know the basic plot line, right? Somewhere in the middle of his life, one day, Noah receives a message from God. We're not told exactly how he got the message, whether it was in a vision or a dream or some deep intuition, but somehow Noah senses God saying to him, get ready, there's going to be a cataclysmic flood that is going to wash everything away. Imagine, if you will, the emotional impact that that message must have had on Noah and his family as he was being told that everything they had known, life as they had known it, was going to be suddenly swept away. Everything they had known was going to be suddenly washed away. And I'm sure that Noah must have been thinking to himself, God, I never thought it would happen this way. I thought we would spend the rest of our life living in this home, in this city, surrounded by these people, raising our flocks and enjoying life. But now Noah was being told, like the people of North Carolina a couple weeks ago, get ready because everything you have known is going to be submerged in water and swept away. And then it happened. It started to rain and rain and rain. Waters, flood waters began to accumulate. The ark began to rise off the ground and float. And before long, cosmic devastation. Genesis chapter 7, verse 21, all flesh died that moved on the earth. Birds, animals, all human beings, everything on dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life, died. Imagine what it was like for Noah and his family on the ark as they look out and they see people and animals floating in the water. The devastation, everything and everyone they had treasured, gone. So you see, that's what Noah represents in this story. Noah represents someone. Anyone who experiences tragic loss in life. And that means Noah represents you and me, because every single one of us is going to experience tragic loss in life. In fact, the truth, if we were to put it plainly and bluntly, is that every single one of us is already in slow motion reliving the story of Noah and the flood, because eventually everything and everyone that you hold dear will be washed away in this earthly veil. Talk about a universal theme. What are we supposed to do with that? I saw a news story this past week about a little boy who lives near Cincinnati who has terminal cancer. Can you imagine what his parents were feeling when the doctor pulled them aside and said to them, "I'm sorry, but the treatment isn't working. Your son's cancer has spread. He doesn't have much time." In an instant, life as they have known it is swept away. Nothing will ever again be the same for them. God, I never saw it happening this way. I can't breathe. I'm drowning. Waves and billows of sorrow, grief, anguish, anger, confusion washing over them. The news story went on to tell how this little boy is mesmerized by the beauty of Christmas lights, and since he may not live to this next Christmas, his family has decided to treat him to Christmas in September. The whole neighborhood have decorated their houses, and when they brought their little boy outside to see all the lights for the first time in this September Christmas season, he said, "Wow." The family says that he can no longer walk, so he's learned to crawl again. And I'm sure every member of his family is thinking, "Oh God, how will we ever get through this?" That's what Noah represents. Life out of control. There's a powerful story near the end of the Gospel of John where after his resurrection, Jesus is walking with Peter on the beach. As they walk along, there comes a point where Jesus shares with Peter a prophecy foreshadowing what Peter should expect in his life that lies ahead. This is what Jesus said to Simon Peter, John 21:18. "Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished." We can all relate to that. When we're young, we think we're invincible. We think we've got everything under control. We've got a plan and we're going to execute it. But Jesus said to Simon Peter, "When you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." A prophecy obviously specifically directed at Simon Peter, but a prophecy that has universal application, because who among us has not suffered from the illusion when we were younger of thinking, "I can design my life. I've got all these plans," but then life begins slapping us up the side of the head, and it doesn't take us very long to begin to realize that life is going to take us where it wants to. That the circumstances of life are going to put a belt around us like a nurse in a nursing home puts a belt around an elderly client and forces us to go where we do not choose, where we do not wish to go. It was a heavyweight champion, Mike Tyson, who once said, "Everybody has a plan till they get punched in the face." That cuts right through it, doesn't it? Everybody's got a plan till they get punched in the face. What will you do when life punches you in the face? Cancer. The loss of a child or a spouse. Divorce. The loss of a job. The ruin of a career. Moral failure. A family that ostracizes you. The ravages of old age. When the floods of life come, will you be ready? Which brings us to the second key question in this story of Noah and the flood. What does the ark represent in this story? Genesis chapter 6, verse 14 says, God said to Noah, make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. The length of the ark shall be 437 feet. Its width, 73 feet. Its height, 44 feet. Imagine what Noah must have been feeling when he receives this instruction from God. I'm sure Noah is saying, am I hearing you right, God? Can you be serious? Are you telling me that I am supposed to build a boat the size of a small ship miles from the sea? Everybody in this town is going to think I'm completely crazy. My family is going to think I've gone off the deep end, and yet, for some reason, somehow, some way, Noah began to construct the ark. One plank at a time, month by month, year by year. The way the story is told, it appears decade by decade, one plank at a time, he assembles this incredible ark. Hebrews 11:7 says, by faith, Noah, warned by God about events yet unseen, respected the warning and built an ark to save his household. Aha! What does the ark represent in this story? The answer is faith. Noah and his family were saved by faith. They were saved from the flood by their faith. And what worked back then will work equally well for us in our lives today. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen it in the lives of others around me. The only way to get through the floods of life without sinking to the bottom, without losing your soul, without losing your love for life, the only way to get through it is by faith. People who spend years patiently building faith somehow have the miraculous ability to float on the top of the water when the floods of life come. You've heard it said before, hope floats. I'm here to tell you today, faith also floats. Are you building that kind of faith? Don't wait till the rain starts, because it might be too late. A group of retirees were on a charter flight headed to Florida. The flight encountered terrible turbulence as it flew in and through a storm. In fact, before long, one of the plane's four engines stalled out, and then a second of the engines flamed out. The plane started to lose altitude. People were on the verge of panicking when a retired minister who happened to be on the flight said, everybody keep calm, let's just bow our heads in prayer. Everybody did so, except one man who kept his head up, his eyes open. Finally, somebody says to him, why aren't you praying? He says, I don't know how to pray. To which the minister responds, well, just do something religious. So the man started to pass his hat up and down the aisle, collecting an offering. The moral of the story being, if you wait till the crisis to try to figure out what faith looks like, it might be too late. Instead, like Noah, we are called to begin making preparation for the floods of life that will inevitably come, to begin plank by plank building the kind of faith that will be so secure that we're able to float in the storms of life. Every worship experience, every sermon, every Bible passage you read, every prayer you pray, every morning meditation you experience, every act of Christ-like kindness, generosity, or faith, every spiritual small group you experience, every worship song you listen to, plank by plank, little by little, piece by piece, we are in the process of building a faith that will be so strong that it can and will withstand the storms of life. In the movie Alive, came out in the 1990s, it tells the true story of the Uruguayan rugby team. They were on a chartered flight headed to a competition. When they were high above the Andes Mountains, their plane malfunctioned, and the plane crashed into the Andes in a very remote, high-altitude location. Their plane crashed into the Andes Mountains. Amazingly, most of them survived, but the authorities, this was back in 1972, the authorities could not locate the wreckage. For the next 2 months, they huddled in the wreckage of the plane, in the freezing cold, in the bitter snow, in the high altitude, hoping, praying that their deliverance would come. After 2 months of waiting, their hope was beginning to run thin, and that's when three of them decided to take the great risk against all odds of trying to hike out so that they could send back a rescue team for the others. So three of these rugby players decide to take that risk, and they begin walking through the deep snow, through the blizzard winds, through the freezing cold. For 2 or 3 days, they're up and down mountains trying to guess their way through and out to civilization so they can send back help. About the third day, they're growing desperate. As they're hiking up one more mountain, they convince themselves that when they get to the top of this mountain, they're going to look over the edge and they're going to see green valleys and civilization below. And so they hang on and they keep climbing and they keep climbing when they get to the top and look out. All they see is endless snow-capped peaks. It's a pivotal moment. Every fiber of their being wants to say, let's give up. Let's go back. We're done for. Nando and Canessa, the first two to the top of the mountain, have a pivotal conversation. Listen to the difference in their two perspectives.
Nando? Somewhere there's a green valley. See these mountains over here? There's no snow on them. These mountains must be 50 miles away. You think you can walk 50 miles? If we have to, we will.
I can't.
Yes, you can.
I can't.
Not as strong as you. You know what it is that we've lived this long the way we have? 70 days that we climb this mountain. You know what it is? It's impossible. It's impossible, and we did it.
I know.
I'm proud to be a man on a day like this. Alive. that I live to see it. See it in such a place. Take it in. I love you, man. Look. It's magnificent. Carry us over every stone, I swear. I swear it to you. All right. We'll get Tintin. We're gonna send him back down to the plane. We'll take his extra food. You see? You see where the sun's gonna set? That way's west. Into the west of the green valleys of Chile.
I'm gonna die now.
Maybe. But if we die, we're gonna die walking.
Did you catch that key line in there that Nando spoke when he said, "Look, it's magnificent. It's God. It'll carry us over every stone. I swear it to you." And in real life, in that pivotal conversation, Canessa was inspired along with Nando to keep walking. And in real life, they did eventually make it out. They sent a helicopter back to rescue the others. Because of one man's faith, many lived. Without one man's faith, many would have died. I tell you, faith floats. It's what keeps us from sinking in the storms of life. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've witnessed it in the life of my grandmother. It was faith that kept her alive and kept her going when her husband abandoned her. It was faith that kept her going, that kept her alive when she was raising five kids as a single mother in the middle of the Great Depression. It was her faith that allowed her, as an elderly person struggling with cancer, to walk through the valley of the shadow of death with serenity. I saw it with my own eyes. I've seen it with my own eyes in the life of my own mother. When in middle age, she was waiting for the results of tests that we were expecting to deliver a devastating diagnosis, I watched her and I saw that because of her faith, she was unfazed by that moment and confident of whatever would happen. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've witnessed it in my spouse, David, with his seizure disorder that stems from brain tumor surgery 25 years ago, how each morning he gets up and doesn't know what the day will bring, what he will feel, what he will experience, but he keeps walking, he keeps climbing each mountain that is in front of him, and along the way takes in the incredible, spectacular beauty of the scenery of life. I want faith like that. I want faith that floats. It's possible for us to have, live with, experience faith like that if we build it. One plank at a time, one experience at a time, over a period of years. And please note that in this story, please note that the miracle that Noah received was not that he was exempted from the flood. The miracle he received is that he survived it, that he made it through the terrible flood. Isaiah chapter 43, verse 2, God says, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. Do not fear, for I am with you." You see, that's what faith teaches us. Faith teaches us that we are never alone, that God is with us. Years ago, I had a short squat chocolate lab named Truffle. And Truffle was the most anxious, nervous dog I've ever, and she was afraid of everything, and she was attached to me at the hip, didn't want to ever be out of my presence. One day when I was working here at the church, I had her with me, and I was working in room 8 down the hallway, and at one point I needed to leave the room to go get some stuff. One of Truffle's phobias was she was afraid to walk on linoleum. It was like you were asking her to walk on water. And so the hallway here at the church is linoleum, and so when I walked out of the room, I knew to leave her in the carpeted room, it would just freak her out to make her walk across the linoleum. And so I shut the door of the room and went to get what I needed. I heard her whimpering, you know, behind the door, "Oh, please, Dad, don't leave me, don't leave me." About 10 minutes later, I came back through and re-entered the room. There are two doors into room 8, so on the way back, I was closest to the back door, so I entered through a different door than I had exited. When I entered through that door, I saw Truffle standing by the door I had exited, her nose about an inch away from the door, staring intently at it as if she was saying, I know he's going to come back. If I wait, I know he's going to come back. As I walked through the other door and saw her there, I said to her, "Truffle, I'm right here." Her tail started to wag vigorously, and she kept staring ahead at the closed door. She was absolutely convinced that I was now standing on the other side of this door, about to come through. I laughed. She still didn't turn around. So I walked up behind her, bent over, gently touched her on her back. Oh my goodness, the dog about jumped out of her skin. Oh! Oh my gosh, Dad. You were right here with me. That's what faith teaches us. Even when we can't sense it, God is right there with us with a supernatural, powerful presence. Somebody in our congregation told me a story about how in their long struggle with chronic illness several years ago, one day when they were conducting some business down in Columbus, Indiana, they live here in Indy, they were down in Columbus for the day conducting some business. A terrible blizzard blew through, and as fate would have it, as he was wrapping up that day, he just started to feel horrible. He said, I could sense, he says, this was it. I was dying. He probably should have called 911, but in the disorientation of the moment, he says, all I could think was, I've got to get back to Indy. I've got to get back to my home. I've got to get back to my bed. And so he got in his vehicle, and he started driving through this terrible blizzard, going very slowly, trying to navigate his way through all the way, praying, God, you've got to get me home. God, you've got to get me home. When he was almost home, he skidded and his vehicle ended up in a snowbank, completely stuck. Now what was he going to do? God, I don't have the strength to get out and walk in this freezing cold. God, you've got to get me home somehow. He said, that's when I looked up and saw somebody, a stranger, walking down the middle of the street in this blizzard. He walked up to my vehicle, knocked on the window and said, are you okay? No, he said, I've got to get home. Without saying another word, the stranger walked around to the back of the vehicle. He told me I was getting nervous. What's he going to do? Is he going to pull a gun or something? The stranger waded into the snowdrift, rested his hands gently on the back of the vehicle, and then said, go! He said, I hit the gas, and I wasn't stuck anymore. As I drove off, he said, I turned to look back. And Jeff, he said, he wasn't there. There was nobody there. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you are with me. Psalm 23:4. Faith teaches us that even when we can't sense it, God is always right there. There is a supernatural presence with us. If we have built our faith patiently over the course of time, plank by plank, when the flood waters come, there will be a supernatural presence that keeps us afloat when all natural power has failed. Which brings us to our last question. What does the rainbow represent in Noah's story? You know how the story ends, right? The rain stops, the waters eventually subside, the boat, the ark comes to rest on dry ground. Noah and his family walk out of the ark. into a completely new world. Everything and everyone that they had treasured is gone, and they are now alone in a bleak new world. When they look up in the sky and they see a rainbow, what does that rainbow represent? Answer: the promise of the beauty in life on the other side of tragedy. My point is not to minimize the great suffering that Noah and his family experienced, or that we experience when we walk through the tragedies of life, the affliction of cancer, the loss of a child, a sudden stroke that changes our lives forever, the loss of a job or a career. The pain is real. The suffering is great. Noah and his family lost everything and everyone they cared about, and they were now alone. But when they looked up and they saw the rainbow, they knew that meant that God was present with them, and therefore, there would be new life, good life, something beautiful waiting for them ahead. And because they believed in that rainbow promise, it gave them the strength to embrace their new post-tragedy life. Let me close with this. A couple weeks ago, if you were here at the early service, we brought forward and said a special prayer for a person in our congregation named Shelley Fitzgerald. Actually, I think it was in this service, wasn't it? The 11 o'clock service. We prayed for Shelley Fitzgerald. A person in our congregation who, if you've been following the local news, you know she has been through it. The basic story is that she graduated from Roncalli Catholic High School, went off to college, came back, became a beloved and revered guidance counselor at Roncalli High School for 15 years. Then early this summer, somebody in a Catholic parish went to the legal records and dug out a copy of her marriage certificate. You see, a couple years ago, she and her spouse, Vic, got married. They've been together for 22 years, but got officially married a couple years ago. And now a parishioner sent a copy of that marriage certificate to the bishop. The bishop passes it along to the principal of the school, the president of the school. They call Shelley in and basically tell her, you can either divorce your wife, or one way or another, your career here at Roncalli is over. Talk about life as you've known it, changing in an instant. Nothing again will ever be the same for Shelley Fitzgerald. But she's been getting through it by the power of her faith. And already there are signs of rainbow promise on the horizon. Did you get the chance to see Shelley's interview on the Ellen DeGeneres show earlier this week? I don't have time to show the whole thing to you today, but I do want to show you the very end of the interview because I found it just so inspiring. You see, the students at Roncalli have been living what they've been taught, which is you don't lay down and play dead. You struggle for justice in this world. And so the students at Roncalli have been standing up for their guidance counselor and challenging their administration. Unbeknownst to Shelley, the Ellen Show flew some of those students out to Los Angeles so that they could surprise her on the set of the Ellen Show. Watch what happened.
How did the students react?
Oh, they've been incredible. I mean, it's been, you know, we've taught them in this school. It's a life prep school. And we've taught them you stick up for people and you love people and you do it with kindness. And they have our first football game of the year. They had everybody dressed in rainbow stuff and had signs and I support Miss Fitzgerald. And
wow, that's amazing. And they started a GoFundMe page for you, and I just, they sound amazing. Let's meet them. Come on out.
Oh.
I'm just assuming you're Elijah.
Yes, ma'am.
And and who are you?
Anna.
I'm Raquel.
Reagan.
Maddie.
Okay, and you're a football player.
I'm the running back.
The running back. Okay, so it was your choice. You go out on game day and do what?
So before the game, Mom, she ordered a bunch of pride gear, like a... She ordered a sweatband and a bandana.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought it'd be cool to show the whole community that I'm an ally and that I support Ms. Fitzgerald and everybody else.
I know.
That's unbelievable.
So she's a guidance counselor. So what can you say about this woman that, I mean, we're hearing the story, and you can hear the audience is shocked by what's going on. You're shocked by it, but tell me about her.
For me, I had quite a few issues last year, and she was always there for me. Her door was always open. Her room kind of became my safe spot, and she was just my person at Ron Colley. So.
That's amazing. And now she's not there, and that's really hard. She's somebody that you counted on to go talk to when you're going through whatever it is. So you started a GoFundMe page for her, and you've raised how much so far?
Close to $4,000.
$4,000. And what are you going to do with the money?
Well, they have started a foundation, and so they're going to use it to be a catalyst for change, to just continue the word and to get things out and continue change beyond just this story.
Yeah, good, because that school sounds like it needs that. Here's what we want to do. Our friends at Shutterfly love helping people tell their inspiring stories. They want to give you $25,000 towards your GoFundMe. I should say this. If there is someone, Indianapolis, Indiana, right? If this school does not want to hire her back, which, I mean, you went there to high school. I assume it's important to you. But if there's another school out there that would like to hire Shelley, I urge you to do so. I mean, this is an amazing woman.
Talk about rainbow promise. In those kids, I see a future of hope. Those kids at Ron Colley are going to carry this catalyzing moment with them for the rest of their lives and be courageous prophets for change and progress in this world. Not just that, but think of the trajectory of Shelley's own life. I mean, she's gone through great suffering, but for this great flood, she could have lived out her entire life as a good but obscure guidance counselor. But now life has thrust her into this situation, and she's risen as a courageous prophet, seizing the moment. And now her life has far greater significance than if it had just been easy and everything had continued to coast along. That's how rainbow promise works. You never know exactly how it's going to work. You just know that beyond the broken dreams, beyond the floods of life, there is something good, something beautiful waiting for you. And you embrace that rainbow promise, and it gives you the strength to keep moving forward. So the next time life floods you out, I want you to remember the story of Noah and the flood and dare to relive it in your own way, in your own time. It's the only way to keep our heads above water when the storms of life come.